So that's our voices.
Crazy.
I know. All right. Ready?
Yeah.
What's up? I'm Amanda Costco, and you're listening to the Electric Runway Podcast, a podcast exploring the intersection of fashion and technology. Today, we're recording from West Conference, a full-day conference looking at wearable technology for entertainment and sports. And my guest today on the show is Billie Whitehouse. So Billie is a garment engineer, and she's the co-founder and creative director of Wearable Experiments. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
So Billie, I know you're here at West to speak about some of your wearable technology designs for sports, but I wanted to talk to you about some of your more fashion-focused pieces. But before we dive in, I'd like to know, what does fashion tech mean to you? I feel like there's different definitions depending on who you ask.
I like to think of fashion and tech as this like very broad thing. Technology really is everything from a zipper to a button to something that goes into the construction of a garment. Mm-hmm. And we've now labeled it as this like high tech electronics world. But actually, I think fashion and tech is far more integrated in our lives than we really, really believe. So it's just ready to wear. To me, it's everything you put on your body from the beginning to the end of the day. And it's the technologies that go into creating it and making it a seamless experience.
And so what is Wearable Experiments?
So Wearable Experiments is a company focused on designing and integrating electronics, hardware, software, and apparel into your life in this really seamless and meaningful way. So not necessarily building tech for the sake of tech. If we have to remove elements, we do. Mm-hmm. We want this to be seamless, simple, and elegant.
And it started with the Fundawear project.
Precisely.
Is that right? So tell, for folks who don't know what that is.
So Fundawear was our first ever project, and amazing that we were given this campaign. And it was a campaign to build vibrating underwear for couples in long-distance relationships.
I could use that. I could relate.
So it's his and her underwear that is controlled via an app, and you can control him or her from anywhere in the world.
And so so walk me through it. So I put on the underwear, my boyfriend puts on the underwear somewhere else in the world, and then it interfaces with your smartphone. And you touch it, and the touch turns into, is it haptics then?
Exactly. It's haptic
wow.
feedback. So the instant you're touching the application, and there's a position on the body in which you're touching, the vibration on the body then occurs on the receiver.
That's incredible to me. And that's not the only project that you're doing that works with haptics. Your Navigate jackets, which we were talking about earlier, are also, and you're wearing one right now. Oh, that's fantastic. And you know what? It didn't even announce itself to me as hardware or tech. It just looks like a regular jacket, a very well-made regular jacket. Mm-hmm. And so this is going to help you navigate a city, if I have that correct. They're location-specific.
Precisely.
Jackets that using haptic feedback can tell you whether to turn left or to turn right.
Exactly. The idea for us was about keeping you connected with the places and the people that you love. Mm-hmm. So if you are walking around a new city and you've never been there before, there's nothing worse than spending that entire day or 3 days staring down at a map.
Or your phone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you see that constantly in cities day to day, that people fall off sidewalks, they nearly get hit by taxis.
Yeah.
This is very much the future of where you can upload from your smartphone where you'd like to travel to, and then put your phone back in your handbag or in your pocket and walk around the streets unimpeded by your phone.
That's fantastic. And so it seems to me that with haptics and with sensors, we're moving away from wearables that are focused on quantifying the body. So how many steps you took today and, you know, calories burned and things that aren't really useful for someone like me, for example. But we're moving in towards this more, you know, communicative and social fashion tech. And, you know, whether it's communicating with one another, like your Fundawear project, which is looking at the couples in a long-distance relationship, or helping you navigate a city, communicating with yourself, or communicating, interacting, maybe is a better word, with the space around you.
Precisely. I think the notion of quantified self is really for a specific demographic. It wasn't for mass market. So what I'm trying to achieve is bridge the gap between, okay, now we've understood, we've got the senses, how do we then feed that information back onto the body or back to the human in a really seamless but not in your face way.
Mm-hmm.
So the skin is the largest organ on our body, as you know, and it's this underutilized communication system. So, like, knowing and understanding what a touch sensation does on the body in a particular area, mm-hmm. you can really use it as, like, a way to play songs, like, on the body, whether it's a song of direction, a song of emotion, a song of intimacy. It's mm-hmm. For me, it's really about having that messaging service built onto the body.
And that's a really beautiful way of putting it. I've never heard anyone articulate it that way, is that it's a song on the body. And it's not, it seems like it's augmenting our current way of communicating. Right now we're communicating with gestures, with signals, with facial expressions, but this is an entirely new way of communicating that's being layered on. So that's quite fascinating.
There was a really interesting justification for us when Apple launched their watch, mostly because they claimed intimacy. They used haptics for the first time. And so many of the things that have become really important to us and the way we present and the way that our brand is now framed has a lot of these similar things in tow, which, I mean, really validating to me, because now 2 million more users know how to communicate with haptic feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love the fact that these wearables and the whole industry is now evolving.
You love that the haptics are now going mainstream.
Yeah.
That's really neat. So you're here today to talk about sports. So, for example, something you've done on the sports side of things is a collaboration with Oakley and a snowboarder named Scotty James based out of Melbourne. And this is where you actually rigged his snowboarding outfit to give him more airtime on jumps. Do I have that right?
Yes. So we had a month to build a prototype, and it was the most wild experience ever. And it was for the 20 years of Oakley in Australia. So instead of looking back at, like, the history of Oakley, they decided to look forward at, like, what's coming next in mm-hmm. the future of sport. So with that, we collaborated with Scotty, and he literally said, there's a culture around snowboarding, and it isn't about latest, greatest, newest all the time. Mm-hmm. And they're not all looking to wear, like, the garment that's going to make them in the sleek, modern thing go faster. But there are elements of what they want. So they want more airtime, but they don't want to look like they want more airtime.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really interesting balance. So we ended up having to build a skeletal structure that was 3D printed inside a jacket. We had accelerometers and gyros and a 9-axis motion sensor on each turbine. And that could read where he was in rotation and then either increase the spin from one turbine to the other so that you could give him more airtime while he was up there. I mean, like I said, prototype.
But I mean, to put that together in a month, I can't even imagine where I would start. Now, with the work that you do in sports, how do you see that translating into, let's say, street style fashion?
For me, it's all emotional. So you have to care so much about the people you're designing for.
Mm-hmm.
In one case, it might be Scotty James and a snowboarder. In another case, it might be the person walking down the street. You have to love them ridiculously, and that is like an emotional process.
Mm.
When you design with emotions, you then start thinking about design in a really new way. So for me, when it comes to street style, it's like, okay, why would this person need this and or want it? I mean, it has to have that desire element fashion always has. I think what's interesting about wearables at the moment is that, like, they're really looking at the need, and that's consumer electronics in general, I would say. So some of that sexiness is gone because it's not, like, I just want this.
Mm, so you're saying they're looking at function rather than emotion.
Yeah.
I would say that, emotion is something that's missing from a lot of wearable technology design today. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are, like, I could name at least 5 companies that are really trying to establish themselves in that area. Emotion is such an interesting, like, thing to try and quantify. Let's put it in inverted commas, because you can't always understand someone, especially something as, like, complex as empathy. But I believe that there's a range of different companies out there, including ourselves, that, like, our main goal is to have empathy for not just the people we're designing for, but for the object itself. Because then you love the whole experience.
So how do you have empathy for the jacket that you're wearing, other than the fact that you're wearing it?
Well, it has empathy for me.
Interesting. How?
Well, because it's got an awareness of where I am in the world.
Ah, that's right. So we're really literally bringing our clothes to life.
I believe so.
And you're excited about it. It doesn't freak you out.
No. I mean, I think there's 2 elements. The emissions on the body are really, really low. So you're already carrying around this, like, beast of emissions in your smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that whatever we're producing is, like, far, far lower than that
mm-hmm.
gives me a lot of comfort. Also, like, knowing that these things evolve no matter what. So it's either me who's going to do it and who's going to love the people I'm designing for, or it's going to be someone else. Mm-hmm. And I can't guarantee what they're going to build it for. But this stuff's already happening. It's just a matter of when.
So Wearable Experiments has offices in New York and Australia, mm-hmm. and you're from Australia.
Yes.
So I want to dig into you a little bit now here. You've been called the Elon Musk of fashion. Do you see yourself as playing an important role in shifting attitudes about design, particularly when it comes to wearable tech?
For sure. And I think it's so funny having this conversation before the keynote, because I think mm-hmm. you'll see a little bit more into like the insights of how my design thinking works. Mm-hmm. And 100%, that's like a massive part about what we do. Mm-hmm. My background is design education. Mm-hmm. I came from that area of like, you think about a problem in a really different way when you're teaching someone how to solve it for themselves rather mm-hmm. than spoon-feeding them.
That's really interesting. And speaking of your design background, your mother was a designer and she funded a design institute with, I think the story is, $1,000 in her pocket. So she's an entrepreneur and a designer.
Yeah.
So how did she affect you? How did she impact your life?
Enormously.
Yeah.
I was actually just home for her 60th birthday. I think my mother gave me an insight into fashion that was about the like quality of work. She opened my eyes to, honestly, the best of the best, I believe, of, like, these students are going to be A-level students because... And I sat there in markings until I was 15. And then at the same time, you know, she obviously worked really, really hard. There's always pros and cons when someone works really hard when you're a young child, but it all worked out in the end. Mm. She's, like, my best friend.
Oh, that's lovely. Mm. So what did you want to be when you grew up, when you were younger? Because to say I wanted to be a garment engineer, that didn't even exist. Wearable technology wasn't even a buzzword like it is now. What did you have aspirations of being?
Well, I kind of rebelled, actually. Rebelled from, like, the traditional design career, I mm-hmm. suppose, that was laid out to me. In about 15, I decided I wanted to be a doctor. I think mostly because I really enjoyed Latin. And I just was like, oh, yeah, like, this is so interesting. And then from that, I actually looked into being a journalist for a hot second.
Oh, yeah.
Because I thought, oh, that way you get to be an expert in so many different fields. But then after about a year, I went to Sydney University to start with. And after a year of university, my mother took me away to Italy for Christmas. And I fell in love with this one city. And she said, well, if you come and study with me, I'll send you here to do your master's. And I was like, okay, done.
Sold.
And as much as, like, yes, it sounds like that was really easy, I still have to go through everything, the interview process, and you have to present a portfolio and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I switched over to a design degree. And I think, obviously, I didn't really know that wearable technology was a thing, but I'd already been interested in, like, new ways of engineering clothing. So mm-hmm. I added lentils to, like, some of my seams to give them weight and then, like, change the color. And it was, I mean, I was a little bit weird, but, like, there was always...
clothing you can cook eventually.
Exactly. Like, it was already this thing that I was like, I just don't want it to be the same. It doesn't need to be the same as everything else. And then I did my master's in Italy, which was the best year of my life. I came home and worked for mum's business, and I was teaching and styling and running alumni relations. So I was doing a lot between the industry and how then they could communicate with the students, and that to me was really fun. So I was setting up, like, philanthropic ventures for the school and a range of different opportunities for the students. And that's when I just started, like, ticking. I was like, okay, first there's 3D printing and this is the future of manufacturing, and then there's hardware, and then there's software. And so I was looking at different gaming solutions for designers, and I think eventually I just sort of started combining all three.
Putting all the pieces together.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier, and I want to go back to it, that a designer thinks about solving problems differently.
Mm.
So how do you think about designing clothing differently than an engineer, let's say?
So I've been teaching a couple of workshops, actually. I taught one at Stanford this year, and it was, for me, it was really interesting to deconstruct my own process. So I start with an area of the body,
mm-hmm.
and I ask, like, people to think about their favorite area of the body, just because I think it's really natural to think that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, while that's going on, I talk about some of the latest technology. So a bunch of sensors that are out there. Haptics are obviously something we specialize in. Graphene, sound, smell, like all the five senses and how we design for those. The actual sensors that go around those sensors. So once we sort of got to that level and they've decided the area, I asked them to physically mold the area of the body with some silicone putty, and I either have, like, a range of different prototyping tech on the table, or it's imaginary, and it's like, okay, what would you do if, you know, there was no limits? Which I actually think is a better process, because otherwise you're too often thinking about the limitations of technology mm-hmm. rather than why this thing should be built. So then when you've got the shape designed, I get you to lay it out again, and sometimes you like cut pieces off and you add bits and make the design beautiful, because again, it has to be. And then I ask them to think about softness, like how soft does it need to be on the body? Could it be in fabric form? Can this drape, does it like fall correctly? And then if it, let's say it is something that can go around your neck, but isn't a necklace, is something entirely different. I ask them to sort of describe it to me, but sell it to me. What is this?
Pitch it.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Is if I'm the person that you're selling it to and I'm about to buy it or give you $2 million to start building it. I find it's like an amazing experiment. Design is very gendered. People forget that, you know, a woman's wrist is much smaller and, you know, the way we touch our neck is actually really symbolic of how we feel. And, yeah, it becomes this really interesting psychology around it as well.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. And I was actually wanting to ask, you're a woman, you're designing for males and females. So much of the wearable tech that I've seen, we have this sort of shrinking and pinking phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So you make a gadget and then you make it smaller and pink for women. What are we missing in that process?
Well, because shrink it and pink it doesn't work. Like my favorite, was it Barbie? No, it wasn't Barbie. It was Lego. Mm-hmm. They released a shrink it and pink it version once, and it was such an abomination. Because you just don't do that. Like, good design lasts a lifetime. Like, some of my favorite pieces are like from the 60s, and they're still like high quality, and because it's about a style rather than a movement.
And perhaps good design appeals to humans.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're just about closing in on the time that I have with you here, but I wanted to ask, as someone who's working in both technology and fashion, what do you think technology has to learn from fashion, and vice versa? I'll turn the question on its head. What do you think fashion has to learn from technology?
So two things. I think fashion has this really beautiful ability to renew itself every 3 months. And we see it with every season and a new style. And we've got to a point where it's adapted to a beautiful level. We don't want to push consumerism anymore. So there's got to be a way to update that. I think that fashion can learn from technology, the way that software updates itself.
Hmm.
So it's not just buy another phone, it's like just update the software.
So perhaps like buy a subscription to my dress and then there's a different pattern that comes out every season.
Or like maybe it's physically software and software changes your dress.
And I print it out at home on my 3D printer.
Exactly. Okay. And then vice versa, what I think technology can learn from fashion is having this sense of nostalgia and respect for it.
Hmm.
I don't think that going so fast in one direction is necessarily the right way. Fashion has this beautiful, like, revolution nature.
And almost like self-referential nature.
Exactly.
That's really, yeah.
And I don't know that technology has nailed that yet. I can see it beginning. We're in the beginning of it now. Mm-hmm. There's a disrespect still that happens, whereas I think there needs to be more of a respect.
For the past.
Yeah.
So, Billy, how can people connect with you?
Oh, please, follow us at Wearable X, and that's with a capital X.
Mm-hmm.
That's on Instagram and Twitter, and I'm at Billy W. House.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for spending time with me today, and I look forward to your keynote.
Wonderful. Thanks.
Thank you. That was my interview with Billy Whitehouse of Wearable Experiments. To see some of her work we discussed, including the Navigate jacket and the Fundawear underwear, visit the Electric Runway blog at www.electricrunway.com/blog/Billy-Whitehouse, and that's B-I-L-L-I-E for Billy. That's it for this episode. Until next time, here's looking towards the future.